Gerritsen and Toth presents The Shift with Jack Johnson on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM.
It is Wednesday, and it's another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Shout out to our presenting sponsors, starting with Gerritsen and Toth. They handle the most complex felony, federal, or state criminal defense cases. You'll find them in doing that successfully, helping criminal defendants all over the Kansas City area and Northeast Kansas for years. With it being Wednesday, we have a couple of options that we can do. Usually that on Wednesdays, we want to preview Kansas and Kansas State, and we will do that. Kansas State will be taking on Texas Tech later this weekend. Kansas will be hosting Iowa State. We'll get into that in the second segment of the show today. And of course, tomorrow, we'll have our three keys to the game for the Kansas City Chiefs playing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And then on Friday, we'll do our three heroes to the game. And that's how we've been doing it every football season, that we preview college on Wednesday and usually start getting into NFL on Thursday and Friday. But we will open up the show today talking some NFL. And it does involve the Kansas City Chiefs, because where will this game be played on Sunday night? We're likely coming down to a final decision either today or tomorrow. They're not going to leave it up to Friday on where these teams will be playing. But as we all know, a hurricane is expected to impact that area of Florida. Folks have already been asked to evacuate their homes. So looking less and less likely that Tampa Bay will be hosting this game on Sunday Night Football against the Chiefs. Instead, there's a couple of other options that could be played, or where this game could be played. Minneapolis is an option at U.S. Bank Stadium. You know, I would throw it out there that maybe New Orleans could be an option. Atlanta maybe could be an option if it's far enough away, far enough inland from Hurricane Ian, is it? I believe it's Hurricane Ian. So there are options to both these teams and relocating the game on Sunday Night Football to go play there. However, I look at this and I go, what a brutal break for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Number one, you know how well Chiefs fans travel. It doesn't matter where the game is played, whether that's in Vegas, whether it's in LA, whether it's in Chicago, whether it's in New York. There is always a hell of a lot of red. And posing as a intimidating fan base to whatever home team is hosting the Chiefs. And Indianapolis last weekend, there was a lot of red. And it stands out because it's a blue stadium. Lucas Oil has blue seats. The crowd's wearing blue, so red stands out. But even in their road games last year, the year before that, even in the Alex Smith era, Chiefs fans travel incredibly well. So now you've flipped it due to extreme circumstances, natural disaster at that. You're taking a home game away from Tampa Bay, because Tampa Bay fans do not travel well. They didn't before Brady. They don't travel well with Brady. So if this game's go to, let's say Minneapolis is the destination here, that'll be 70% Chiefs fans. So now you're taking a home game and you're just flipping it. It's on a neutral field, but there's more Chiefs fans in attendance. So it is a break for Kansas City, but I also hate saying it's a break because this is a really serious situation that goes beyond the game of football. Now, this is something that is going to devastate some homes, devastate lives, so football really shouldn't be on the mind. But with this being a sports show, a sports radio show, you have to talk about the logistics of what this means for a football game on Sunday night. Now, like I said earlier, I think this is going to come down to a final decision either today or tomorrow, just because you're not going to wait till Friday to announce where this game will be played. Now, Marco, I'm sure you've spent a lot of time not only today but yesterday on the Border Patrol going over where this game could be played, but what would you say from what you've heard so far, what Steven and Nate have been talking about, what guests have been saying about the likelihood of this game being played maybe in Minneapolis, maybe in New Orleans, but anywhere other than Tampa Bay.
Yeah, so we just talked to Adam Teicher this morning, and Adam is somebody that will be traveling wherever the game is going to be played at. It's still up in the air. And, from a football standpoint, and actually we had a caller today call in, and he said he was planning on going to the game, has tickets. He was asking if we know anything as far as a refund or what the NFL's policy is if they were to play it in New Orleans or Minnesota. And we couldn't give him an answer simply because we're not the NFL, and the NFL has kind of been, I wouldn't say hush about it, because obviously reporters know that the options of playing it out at a neutral site is up there, but it's just, can you give a timestamp for it? Because that's a big thing. Chiefs Kingdom travels well, and a lot of people had this game circled as far as an away game to go see this year because, well, one, rematch of the Super Bowl from a couple of years ago, Mahomes and Brady, Sunday Night Football, Florida, because it's a travel hub destination. It's one of those things where people have plans, and they need to, and they plan around it, and they need answers. And the NFL has kind of held back. But so no, it's as far as what have learned from Adam and just kind of been keeping up and following from around the league, news with around the league, there hasn't been any certainty as far as whether or not this game is going to stick in the Florida as planned or go to the NFL. One of my things is I just wish the NFL would be more communicative. There's always reasons for what we don't know. Of course, don't know everything, but at the end of the day, there's a lot of things circling around this outside, of course, the players, coaches, the teams that are going to be playing in this game. They need answers. I know it's a few days out still, and it's only Wednesday, but just one of those things. So nothing heard yet as far as, but it sounds like, and Adam too, it sounds like people are still planning for Tampa Bay until otherwise known.
What is a common and where they will be playing is it's going to be in a dome. Now it sounds like if it's U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis, dome. You go to New Orleans, dome. Now, I'm going to go down the list here just off of potential stadiums because let's keep in mind, we can throw out names all we want. Those teams may be playing at home or may not allow other teams to come play in their stadium. But you're looking at week four. The Saints are at home. So, actually, excuse me, I was wrong on that. They're in London.
They're playing. So yeah, Minnesota yeah, and yeah. New Orleans are
They're
playing.
They're both yeah. in London. So yeah. That's why those two names have come up a lot because they won't even be in America on Sunday. Atlanta is at home. Throw out Atlanta. So I didn't mention that earlier. I was just going off the top of my head on potential places that are near Tampa Bay where maybe the Buccaneers would say, hey, we'd like to go play there. Now, one that does raise a question for me is maybe on the East Coast. How far up along the coast can you go? Like, Carolina's at home. I haven't heard much about Carolina having to evacuate anything. So this looks like it's really going to only affect the panhandle of Florida, just around the coast of Florida. And if you're inland, you're likely fine. So Tampa and Kansas City are going to likely have to find a new destination here. Now, one more thing to add here. They haven't completely ruled out, at least in my... Have they completely said this game will not be played in Tampa?
No, it hasn't been...
There's still a remote chance.
Yeah.
I would say it's played there, and I guess it kind of comes down to the severity of this hurricane. You know, that's why maybe they're waiting longer, because they don't want to take away a home game from Tampa Bay. You got to think about the livelihood, though, of people here. But if, let's say today, later on today, let's say maybe early tomorrow, a hurricane lessens on its impact, you know, that can happen. I'm no hurricane expert. I'm no natural disaster expert. But from time to time, you can see a hurricane maybe out in the middle of the water as a, I think it goes by categories, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
a category,
one through five.
Yep. Yeah, category three hurricane. It may drop down to a category two, and then maybe by the time it gets closer to shore, it could be a category one. So that is something you need to factor in here, and maybe why it's so difficult for the NFL to make this decision. Now, from a football standpoint, a scheduling standpoint, if you're Kansas City, you don't want the game to be played in Tampa Bay. You'd rather be played more inland. Minnesota, New Orleans. And you're traveling well to either of those stadiums. So you're playing a neutral site game on what was going to be one of your more difficult opponents. Sunday Night Football against Tom Brady in his own house. That's tough to go in there and win. But it's a fascinating story to follow right now. Because we weren't even thinking about this last Sunday. When the Chiefs were playing the Colts, nobody was thinking about, well, there's still a chance we don't play Tampa Bay in Tampa. And really, in the NFL, you need a lot of breaks. If you're going to have the season that ends up with a Super Bowl, you need breaks. That no matter how good you are, you know, for example, Buffalo has not caught a break yet. Buffalo's incredibly banged up. They're incredibly hurt. And Miami caught a break. Why did they catch a break? Because the first time they played Buffalo, Buffalo wasn't at full strength. They were able to beat the Bills. And you only play the Bills one more time unless you meet again in the postseason. So if your expectation is winning the division or splitting with the Bills, they got it done because of unforeseen circumstances. You know, in the AFC West, the Chargers have not caught a break. They've been the most banged up team in the NFL. And when they played Kansas City, their number one wide receiver was out. And then when they played Jacksonville, their quarterback was maybe 60-70%. And they lose more guys to injuries. You know, for Denver, they've played horribly. They've caught breaks because they've played three of the worst teams in the NFL. Those are things you factor in. Now, for Kansas City, I would say they've been kind of hovering on not lucky, but also not lucky. They've been just kind of playing through these three games without really catching a break, but they just played poorly last Sunday. That wasn't a factor of luck. That was just playing a bad game. That was being a bad football team on any given Sunday. This would be a break for the Chiefs if they do not play in Tampa. It would be incredibly unfortunate for Tom Brady and the Buccaneers, but that's just the reality of the NFL. These things can happen. It's not the first time this has happened in the NFL. Having to relocate a game to play elsewhere. Remember, it happened last year. The Saints were supposed to have a home game. Week one of the NFL season. They couldn't play there, so they had to go to Carolina and host the Green Bay Packers in week one. And they dominated. So it comes down to which team's more motivated when you move. Obviously, fan attendance can be an impact. Now, one thing you pointed out too, Marco, is about a fan that calls in, says, I had tickets to the game down in Tampa. If you wait till Thursday to make a decision, how many people can flip on a dime and go travel elsewhere? Now, I guess if you were already traveling to Tampa, your schedule's clear. It just comes down to finding a flight. And I guarantee you those flights will immediately book up wherever this game is going to be played.
Yeah, in fact, we were supposed to have a person in studio this morning, but her flights were getting delayed left and right yesterday, and it got pushed back. So, yeah, that's another concerning thing is just getting a flight to Tampa. I will say Gary Lezak was on with us this morning. He's been eyeing the storm for a while now. It's been forming outside on the ocean like you talked about, and he says it's expected to hit land either this afternoon or evening.
Really?
Yeah, so I'm sure the NFL's keeping a close eye
monitoring
on that as well.
One last thing I do want to point out, and I hate that I have to do this, but in some people's minds, this would be a big impact. And you can gamble up to Sunday afternoon, really, or early Sunday evening. But there are going to be people out there that only look at this game and say, okay, I need to know the line on this game. And right now, I think Kansas City's a 2.5-point favorite on the road. That's in Tampa. If it's on a neutral field, that line will jump. So there's a lot of factors going in. By far and away, the most important, though, is people's safety. That's really what I would only care about, is making sure people get evacuate their homes, and we pray that this hurricane is really not much to be alarmed about. Of course, they're taking the right precautions there, but this goes beyond football, right? This game will be played somewhere, so that's not a concern there. If you're worried about betting, gambling on it, there will still be a line. There will still be plenty of time to do that, but by far and away, you're just hoping this is not a severely damaging hurricane. Of course, that's tough to say because any type of hurricane can be damaging. You just hope that everybody is safe out of harm's way by the time, as Gary Lezak pointed out, that this storm would hit the shore of Florida. So that is the big news right now regarding the Chiefs. We'll get into later about three keys and three heroes on Thursday and Friday, but we don't even know where this game will be played. We likely will know either by the end of today or maybe early tomorrow. All right, we're going to get our first break. When we come back, some college football talk. We'll preview KU and Iowa State and Kansas State and Texas Tech next on The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. It is The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. K-State and KU both at home this weekend. We'll start with the Wildcats hosting the Texas Tech Red Raiders, who are coming off an impressive win against Texas. Of course, Kansas State coming off their win down in Norman against the sixth-ranked Sooners. Wildcats open as a 7.5-point favorite, over-under at 57.5. Kickoff will be at 11 a.m., on ESPN Plus. Through the first four games for Kansas State, a common denominator of what we've talked about in our preview has been Adrian Martinez. How good is Adrian Martinez? What can Adrian Martinez give you when he's faced with adversity? And so far this season, Adrian Martinez has given you three clunkers of a game and one Heisman type of performance of a game. Very much wishy-washy, inconsistent. But on a positive side here, Adrian Martinez is coming off the best performance of his career, and maybe that's the confidence booster that he always needed, dating back to his days at Nebraska even. You go into Norman, primetime on Fox, late-night kick, and you play the way you just did, that can carry you for the rest of the season. And now it goes from K-State had the worst quarterback in the division to K-State has a top three quarterback in this division, and you're riding high. You beat the best team in the conference. And that's important to note in this upcoming schedule for Kansas State, because after their loss to Tulane, it was doom and gloom. There was no way in hell this team can compete for a Big 12 title. You throw those aspirations, those hopes out the window. It's just a matter of, let's get the 7 or 8 wins. Let's still have a good season, but it's not going to happen after losing to Tulane. And I still can't put my finger on how they lost to Tulane. They were at home. Tulane's good, not great. They followed up their win against Kansas State and lost to Southern Miss this last weekend. So Tulane is no world beater. It just happened to be a fluky type of performance, a game in which the offense didn't have great play calling. They didn't execute. The defense did their job, but could only do so much when the offense was playing as poorly as the Wildcats were against Tulane. But against Oklahoma, the offense had an A-plus performance. That was as good as it could get for Kansas State. And now you return home in the comfort of your own environment to host Texas Tech. And Texas Tech this season is no different than, I think, a Texas Tech team of old. They score a lot of points. They give up a lot of points. And they're coming off a win, a thriller in overtime against Texas. They've beaten Houston this year, 33-30, and they beat Murray State, 63-10, in the home opener. Their only loss this season comes against the undefeated NC State Wolfpack. So by far and away, a good resume. There's no disputing the fact that Texas Tech has played a tough schedule to date. They played three consecutive teams that were ranked. Houston at the time was 25th, NC State was 16th, and Texas was 22nd. Kansas State, on the other hand, has played the best opponent of the two. They had Oklahoma. They've also beaten Missouri 40-12 and South Dakota 34-0. So what does this game come down to? Of course, we can look at this and say, well, you get Deuce Vaughn going, Texas Tech can't hang in this game. Well, Adrian Martinez plays the way he did against Oklahoma, they win this game. Those are both true. If you play 80%, 85% of what you gave against Oklahoma last Saturday, you're winning this game and you're covering this game. Where Texas Tech could make this interesting is that they are a high-flying offense. Donovan Smith is leading the conference right now in passing. He is averaging 279.3 yards through the air. His completion percentage is 65.7%. He's thrown 9 touchdowns. However, he's also thrown 5 picks. Adrian Martinez is averaging 134.5 yards per game, 62% completion percentage, 2 touchdowns, no picks. That is important also to note here. Adrian Martinez, through 4 games, has not turned the ball over. He hasn't. And that was always a concern. That was a fear for Kansas State fans when he was coming over from Nebraska, because at Nebraska, he was turnover prone. A lot of fumbles, a lot of picks, and even in his best year, he had double-digit interceptions. So to me, this comes down to taking care of the football for both sides here, because Donovan Smith, he's more of a gunslinger than Adrian Martinez is. He is going to live and die by throwing the football. I mean, seriously, in the backfield, in the running game, Texas Tech just doesn't run the ball. Taj Brooks this season is averaging 42.5 yards on the ground per game. That's not effective running. They throw the ball everywhere. So far in the country, they are 35th in yards per game. 35th in yards per game. Points per game, they're 60th. Then you go to rushing yards per game. Texas Tech is 215th. K-State is 15th in the country. Both teams are pretty equal in third down conversion, because either K-State was third and long for the first 3 games of the season and couldn't convert because Adrian Martinez is a little bit timid, but that has since boosted from their performance against Oklahoma. So Texas Tech, and this has always been the case, whether it be Cliff Kingsbury, whether it be any coach they've had, it was always, we're going to throw the football. We are going to live and die by throwing it 50 to 55 times a game. Our defense is going to give up a lot of points, but what you hope for when Texas Tech pulls off upsets is they turn it over. It is very much an aggressive, aggressive mentality. And when your defense isn't very good, what do we talk about on the show about what the Chiefs need, what Chiefs teams of old have needed on defense? It was that they needed an identity. They needed to do something well. If you can't stop the run, if you can't stop the pass, well, then sell out to turn the ball over. And that's what I think Texas Tech will try to go out and do on Saturday. You know, you're not going to be able to stay out on the field and just force 3-and-out, 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 one after the other against Kansas State. When they play their style of football, they are matriculating the ball down the field. A little Hank Strom quote there. Matriculating the ball down the field. It's methodical. They're running the ball well. They're running the RPO well. They use a 10, 11, 12 play drive. They eat up about 5, 6, maybe 7 minutes of the clock, and they punch it in for 6 or 7. Texas Tech wants the ball in their hands a hell of a lot more than Kansas State does. So how do you effectively do that? Well, when you look at this on paper, Texas Tech's going to come out throwing the ball over the field. And if you go and score, they're not worried about Kansas State, coming back and throwing the ball over them. Kansas State has that ability, but it's not in their offensive game plan. K-State doesn't run the air raid offense. Texas Tech does. So when Kansas State is throwing the ball through the air, you're thinking a lot of blitzes. You're thinking a lot of gambles in the secondary. And that's how I believe Texas Tech would think they can pull off the upset. You sit back on your heels and you try to play toe-to-toe, face-to-face with Kansas State, they're going to beat you in the end. Because when they play their style of football, when they don't need to speed it up, they are going to beat teams. Oklahoma tried to speed it up against Kansas State. It didn't work. There were a lot of errant throws by Dylan Gabriel. Even on 4th and short, 3rd and short, there'd be a guy open in the flat, and Dylan Gabriel just overthrew him. That's when you're panicking, when a team that likes to run the air, when they want to speed it up, when they want to throw the football, and it's not working, they press. They make bad decisions. They make mistakes. Kansas State, when they're thriving, it's a well-oiled machine. They're picking up every single third down inside of 5 yards. On 1st and 10, they're picking up 7 or 8 on the run with Deuce Vaughn or Giddens. Malik Knowles is beating his guy simply one-on-one. It doesn't need to be 20, 25 yards down the field. It's just 9 yards, 10 yards, 11 yards, and it's simple for Adrian Martinez to run that offense. But for Texas Tech, Donovan Smith, they want to catch K-State napping. They want to go for those 15, 20, 25-yard passes in double coverage. And if he's on, if Donovan Smith is on, that's where you start thinking about an upset in Manhattan. And you think about the emotion you're coming off of in playing Oklahoma. Kansas State will need to be careful with that because in all likelihood, for as perfect as you played on Saturday against Oklahoma, you're likely not going to play as perfect as you did against the Sooners. You're going to play, hopefully, 80% of that, 85% of that, because with that type of total, you can still beat Texas Tech. It's why the line is 7.5 in this one. You're playing at home. Be a great environment. It's an early kick. So there's times where teams come in a little bit flat because it's so early. You're not on national television. You're on an app that doesn't even work half the time. That does factor into this performance. Where I'll go with this game, because I was so wrong last week, I will take Kansas State to win. I can see a backdoor cover, though. So I'll take Kansas State to win against the Red Raiders, but I will go Red Raiders plus 7.5. I could see Kansas State being up late by 14 in the fourth quarter, and with maybe a minute, 2 minutes to go, Texas Tech scores and makes it a 7-point game. That's how I could see the outcome of this game happening, just because Donovan Smith doesn't always take care of the football that well. They are uber aggressive. I mean, you talk about 4th and 6, 4th and 7, midfield, maybe slightly into K-State territory. They're going to go for it because they want to score touchdowns. They do not want to kick field goals. It's how they beat Texas. They wanted to go for it. The Longhorns didn't match the intensity, the aggressiveness of Texas Tech, and that factors in. If you don't match the aggressiveness, the intensity of how Texas Tech operates, they can catch you off guard and they can upset you. Again, kickoff will be at 11 a.m. on ESPN Plus in Manhattan, Kansas State and Texas Tech. Marco, when you look at this game, of course, this has always been Texas Tech, whether it be Patrick Mahomes, whether it be Graham Harrell, whether it be Donovan Smith. It's just air it out. We're going to take our chances. And we may lose this game 65-60, but we can take pride in knowing that that's our style of play. They've just never had a great defense. They rely on their defense if they give up 45 or 50 that they've turned over a team two or three times. So to you, what is your prediction on this? Do you see Texas Tech walking into Manhattan, pulling off the upset, or are you going to stick with Kansas State maintaining that composure, maintaining that success they had against Oklahoma, and carrying it through Saturday's game against Tech?
I'm going to stick with K-State in this one, and I expect it to be a very huge Deuce Vaughn type of game. I think what we'll see out of Chris Klieman and the Wildcats is let's run the ball, let's run it effectively while eating up the clock. And so that's what K-State does best, too, is running the football. So I look forward to be that. I think it's going to be a blowout in this game. I think Kansas State's defense is really good, especially up front. I think they're going to give Texas Tech a lot of trouble because at the end of the day, like you said, this is a one-sided offense who, you know, in the game against Texas, they're the team that had the ball at the end. Texas had an opportunity to win, lost it, and Tech took advantage of it and was able to get the upset last week. It's a game in Manhattan. The Kansas K-State, I mean, what holds them back is mostly themselves. You go back and you look at the mistakes that were made in Tulane. That was just game planning, play calling, and the coaching just not making the right calls when you need to make it. And so Oklahoma was a get right game, and I think that we'll see Kansas State kind of get back to some normalcy and be the Kansas State team that critics and radio talk show people like us were thinking that we were going to see this year. It's always just this could be a team that could come out of the Big 12 undefeated, of course, but just had a minor slip up against Tulane and showed us the bad side of Kansas State. So you don't want to get into a gunslinging match with Texas Tech by any means, because that's something that they do well at. But at the end of the day, this Kansas State is overwhelmingly the better team between these two universities. So I think for the Wildcats, they made the mistakes, they learned from them after Tulane, saw it last week down in Oklahoma. So I like Kansas State, and I like them big in this one. And I'm doing a lot of player props for Deuce Vaughn this Saturday.
It's not a bad idea whatsoever, because Deuce Vaughn is always going to be the guy that gets his yards One more thing to add in about this game before we jump to KU and Iowa State. K-State is wildly impressive when they are doubted. And that's why I think they went into Norman and beat the Sooners, because everybody had sort of ruled them out at that point. You lost to Tulane. No way in hell you're beating Oklahoma. They do struggle when there's expectation. There is a stat out there I forgot to bookmark on Twitter, but how many days under Chris Klieman Kansas State has been ranked? And it's not been that good. It is alarming that when Kansas State gets ranked, they usually falter. Now, that wasn't the same under Bill Snyder, but that has been a reoccurring problem under Chris Klieman. If you are a team that thrives when you are doubted, well, if you're a good football team, you're not always going to be doubted. I think going into this weekend, the expectation is that Kansas State can handle Texas Tech. Kansas State will be ranked 25th, and we'll see just how long they can stay in the top 25 this year, if it's for the rest of the year or if it's for only 1 week, which a loss would, of course, drop them out of the top 25. Alrighty, up next on our docket here, Kansas and Iowa State. Kickoff will be at 2:30 on ESPN2. This is the biggest game. I keep saying every single week, right, the biggest game in the last 13 years for Kansas, and it's not a very high bar to climb here. But the reason this one is bigger than the first four is, of course, Tennessee Tech was important. You needed to start out that season 1-0, and you needed to hammer an opponent. Week two against West Virginia. That was wildly important because it's a Big 12 opponent. It's on the road. And you'd only had one Big 12 road win since 2008. You got it done. Then you played Houston. I said it was the biggest game of the year because that's the first opponent that was ranked on your schedule, was previously ranked. You got it done and you won. And I said Duke was a very big game because crowd was sold out. You needed to go in and prove that with all this media hype, all this national attention, you had to come through and win that game. The reason this is so big and why we'll get a great feel of Kansas on Saturday, even with their 4-0 start, there have been critics out there saying, well, Kansas doesn't play anybody. They've played bad defenses. That's the only reason Jalen Daniels is good, because they've played bad defenses. And this team will be exposed by a much better defensive program. Iowa State has been a team I think Kansas has attempted to resemble for the last 13 years. Or maybe that's too strong here. The last five. Whenever Matt Campbell took over at Iowa State, I think that's what Kansas has been shooting for, because Iowa State was preseason top 10 last year. And though they're not a 10-win team, they've never had a 10-win season, it's the consistency under Matt Campbell. I'm sure there's jokes that can come in here that with the best Iowa State team ever, that Iowa State went, what, 7-6? Last year, they had all that talent, all that experience, and couldn't get much done. But I think if you're Kansas, you would take that level of consistency. And Lance Leipold mentioned that in his presser, that they want to be like what Iowa State is and the way they've built their program. That, you know, Matt Campbell's gotten a lot of coaching offers. I think even he was tied to the Dallas Cowboys rumors before they hired Mike McCarthy. And that is important to note here, that Iowa State, though they have never really been a top dog in this conference, they quickly rebuilt their program under Matt Campbell, and they became a team that you could look at in the Big 12 standings and go, that's a tough team to go and play, and they're going to make a bowl game every single year. And going into this game, Iowa State is 2-1. They have the worst scoring offense in the Big 12. They have the best scoring defense. Kansas, complete opposite. Best scoring offense in the Big 12, worst scoring defense in the Big 12. So something is going to have to give on Saturday. The reason I put so much emphasis on this game is because you go in there and you beat Iowa State and you're 5-0. Number one, you're ranked. You'll be hosting TCU the next weekend at home, 11 a.m. kick on FS1. But you're 5-0, and the criticism, the knock of playing a top 50 defense or not playing a top 50 defense goes out the window, because Iowa State's defense is good. And you're starting to then wonder if Kansas at 5-0 can finish a season with 8 wins, maybe 9 wins. And that's unbelievably absurd to think about for a Kansas team that you'd have to add up a couple of years in the mid-2010s to get to 9 wins. And if they start 5-0, you'd have confidence that they could beat TCU. You'd have confidence that they could beat Texas Tech. You have confidence they could hang with one of those top three teams in Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and Baylor. You have confidence that they could beat Texas at home, depending on Texas's health. And I think this is why the players really, really, really look at this game and go, this is where we get all of our credibility. This is where people start taking it seriously. Because as good as Kansas has been through the first four games of the season, as for as much hype as they've gotten from outside media, this is the type of game where you get credibility, credit, props from other Big 12 opponents. Because Iowa State, though they're not a top team in this conference, they're a good team. They're better than West Virginia. And the line in this game is close. It's 3 points in favor of Iowa State. But this really feels like a pick'em to me. This is really, 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 really much of a toss-up. I've said really a lot in this segment. But this is a toss-up. Hunter Deckers is not as good as Jalen Daniels. He is a conservative quarterback. He's got a very high completion percentage, I believe second in the Big 12. But they don't throw the ball far down the field. And I watched some film on Iowa State and Baylor. Also watched the film for Texas Tech and Texas, just so I could get a better estimate, because I am a betting man as well. I put money down on both these games. But you want to see really what this team is about. Because prior to Baylor, I hadn't really seen much of Iowa State. I didn't get the chance to watch Iowa State and Iowa. That was a 10-7 game. Seemed pretty boring to me. But Baylor was a team that kind of pulled away late because of the fact that Iowa State, when they trail big, they trail by double digits, they're still not going to get away from their offense. They're going to hope that they get a big catch and run, but they're not throwing the ball 30, 40, 50 yards down the field. They're not really trying to move the ball with much, I guess, pressure, much hurry up. They're not wanting to speed things up. Now, for Kansas's defense, they've struggled through four games. Their best defensive showing, I guess you could say, was Duke, and it still wasn't that pretty. This is still a very good Iowa State team, a very well-coached Iowa State team, and it's where you need to go in on Saturday. And if you really want people to believe that you're the real deal, you've been 4-0, you've done exactly what every fan didn't believe was possible in Lawrence or outside of Lawrence. You've won your first four games. You win five in a row, and you're on the doorstep of being bowl eligible. You'd only need one more of your final seven games to reach a bowl game. But if you start 5-0, you're no longer looking at, hey, I'd take 6-6. You're going, I'll take 7-5, 8-4. And that's just, again, crazy to think about with Kansas football in only year two of the Lance Leipold era. So kickoff for that game will be at 2:30 on ESPN2 against the Cyclones. Marco, last thing we'll say before we're going to break, two polar opposite teams, really.
Yeah.
And that's why you think something is going to give. I think there's been very few times in Big 12 play where the best scoring offense faces the best scoring defense, and the worst scoring offense faces the worst scoring defense. So My question to you, what does give? Who is going to be the one to bow out first between Kansas and Iowa State?
Bow out first. Wow. I think this is going to be similar to the Tech and Texas game. Very close. We'll have a winner come out in the end of it. I think that I don't think defense matters in this one. I think that this will be one where you just see scoring left and right. Over-unders at 57.5. I'm kind of taking in the over. But this is a good test for Kansas. And it kind of came at a perfect time where you're undefeated, 4-0. And you say biggest game of the week each week. Because it really is for Kansas State, because it seems like it's a different challenger for different reasons each time. You had the week one, should win game, but then you got West Virginia, then you got Houston, then you got Duke, and now you have Iowa State. I love the game-by-game mentality that the Jayhawks have been having, and I just think it's going to be back and forth because, one, this is a KU offense that has yet to be stopped by a defense, but also it's a defense. This is a Jayhawks team that's defense has given up 402 yards a game. And so I think that Hunter Deckers and Iowa State Cyclones, they have a disadvantage offensively than the Jayhawks slightly, but I think that I just think this is going to be kind of a back and forth type of football game. And at the end of the day, the team with the better offense wins. And I saw this team play up close in person last week, and it's something special. So I think Kansas pulls away with this one. If it's not a close game, give me Kansas by 10. But I think that the wrong team is favored in this one.
It's an odd world that we live in right now in college football, and it's weird to see Kansas even be playing a Big 12 opponent where the spread is not double digits. I mean, if this game is played last year, the spread was north of 20 in Ames, and that was one of Kansas's worst performances last year in Ames. That was about as bad of a game as they played other than Oklahoma State. But it's going to be fun. Another great environment. I read a great article from Matt Tate, the Lawrence Journal World, yesterday, how they're trying to improve concessions and game day experience because it sounds like the concessions were completely overwhelmed on Saturday. That's about learning how to change things in Lawrence. That things are changing. They're changing for the better. And you're hoping, if you're a Kansas fan, that is, that things continue to succeed. Things continue to happen. Things are fun to go to in Lawrence in the fall and football games. And I think everybody, it's Wednesday.
Hoco week.
Homecoming week. And I think a lot of people out there in Lawrence, if you're a Kansas fan, you're tired that it's Wednesday. You want it to be Saturday already. I know I do. And I think right now college football sort of has this stranglehold on the state of Kansas because both teams are thriving at the right times. All right, we're going to take our second break of the show. When we come back, we got some headlines to go over right here on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Some quick headlines for you here, mainly involving the Kansas City Chiefs. There is a new kicker in town for the Chiefs. I don't know if Harrison Butker will be available on Sunday. Boy, oh boy, do they need him back. Because if Harrison Butker played on Sunday against the Colts, that would be a win for Kansas City. But Matthew Wright, former kicker for the Jacksonville Jaguars, is now in Kansas City with the team. And Marco, take a guess on what number he is.
What number he's wearing?
Mm-hmm. I know I'm kind of throwing. I'm kind of put you on the.
Is it Matt Amendola's number?
It is.
Oh gosh.
They just gave him the same damn jersey, just like they do it in JV. Just one guy's gone. Here's a jersey. They do in minor league baseball as well. One guy's gone. Just take his number. We don't want to have to take time to sort through something else. So Matthew Wright in Kansas City, on the practice squad, will be wearing number 19. If Butker can't go on Sunday night against the Bucks, it will be Matthew Wright. And let's pray that it's a much better outcome than it was for Matt Amendola in two games for the Kansas City Chiefs. The other thing that crossed my headline page here involves Chris Jones and more of a deep dive into his penalty on Sunday against Indianapolis. The game report issued by the official, Sean Smith that is, says Chris Jones used disturbing language that has no place in professional football. So in this article from Mike Florio of PFF, more details inevitably are emerging regarding whatever Chiefs defensive lineman Chris Jones said to Colts quarterback Matt Ryan to draw a flag that extended a game-winning drive that would have otherwise ended in a punt. Per a league source, the post-game report from referee Sean Smith said that Jones used disturbing language and that there is no place in professional football for it. Smith penalized Jones for unsportsmanlike conduct. The source says that Smith, in hindsight, believes he also should have referenced taunting. So Rule 12, Section 3, Article 1C specifically includes the use of baiting or taunting acts or words that may engender ill. Am I using that term right?
How do you spell it?
E-N-G-E-N-D-E-R. Engender ill.
Yeah, engender ill. Yeah.
Engender ill. I've never once seen that, and I should have known this being a journalism major. I should have seen this in a sentence before, but reading it now for the first time. Engender ill. Will between teams within the definition of unsportsmanlike conduct. Still, it's hard to understand how it was taunting or an unsportsmanlike conduct without knowing what Jones said. And that's, I think, what's the most frustrating thing and what we'll likely ever know. Whatever Chris Jones says to Matt Ryan, unless Matt Ryan comes forward or Chris Jones comes forward, it's going to remain unknown to the national public. Now, what I'm curious about is disturbing language and where that could fit in the NFL. And I've never played an NFL game, only played 1 year of high school football. And from the time I was on the field, there are some nasty things that are said, especially in dog piles, you know, just on the field trash talking that happens. And why I believe it wasn't disturbing language is because if it was disturbing, I believe Matt Ryan, for as cool as he is, as calm and collected as he is, would have had a different reaction. And Chris Jones is a trash talker. We've seen Chris Jones get flagged for taunting multiple times before. It cost the Chiefs a game this time around. I just would love to see if there could be, you don't need to give us the full sentence of what he said or whatever words he used there. You could give a reason as to what he kind of said. You could say it was threatening to Matt Ryan. He threatened his livelihood. You know, if it was something beyond that, if it was money related, if it was, you know, Chris Jones threatening to hurt him, you know, injuring him in a dirty play like that, I think you could allude to something like that, because all we get from disturbing language, for all we know, he could have said, you know, F you, MF-er, you're old as hell. Your ass is going to stay on the ground all game long. That's all it could have been said, really. And we just will never know from what Sean Smith, but clearly it was bad enough to warrant a flag. Now, also to point out here, he said he should have brought up the idea of taunting, because by the NFL standards, Chris Jones was taunting, and taunting is such a weak call now in the NFL. If you get in somebody's face, if you stand over them, if you stare at them, if you flex at them, that's a penalty. So, Marco, will we ever know what Chris Jones said, or is this going to be remain unknown for the rest of our lives, really?
Not until he writes a book or something.
Or goes on a show, a podcast, and they're going to say, what'd you say? And he feels comfortable saying it.
That's the only time I could see it happening is the post his NFL career. But yeah, a question that time will tell maybe one day.
And he could lie too. He could tell, that's what he said in the post game. He just said, we were having a conversation, which we all know was not true. It was Chris Jones definitely saying something taunting-wise. Whether it was disturbing, like right. Sean Smith is saying, I have my doubts, because if it was that disturbing, I think more players would have spoken out. Because it wasn't like they were off alone. They were next to linemen and everything. Mm-hmm. Like, if it was that bad, I think some Colts linemen would have jumped in or something else would have happened. But I couldn't see Chris Jones saying something that bad.
Yeah, didn't warrant one of the Colts teammates to give like a go back to your sideline type of push or something like that. So, and you know, referee could be protecting Chris Jones here. Chris Jones could said something wildly outrageous, but once again, we'll just never know.
We will never know. It truly is a head scratcher. It cost the Chiefs a game. It cost them a loss. End of the day, there's nothing you can do about it. That is going to be flagged in the NFL. Chris Jones should have known that, and I expect Chris Jones won't be flagged for something like that again in a tight game where it could cost them or potentially cost them a loss later on in the season. Before we get to some fact or fiction, forgot to mention with American Family Insurance, one of our sponsors as well, one of our presenting sponsors, that with any dream, the wind won't always be at your back, the sun won't always be shining, and some rain is going to fall. American Family Insurance is like a good solid roof that you can trust to protect your biggest dreams. With plans that can save you up to 23% when you bundle your home and auto. Also, you can continue to dream fearlessly no matter what comes your way. Visit Kim Howard and Associates Agency at 150 Metcalf in Overland Park, or give Kim and her team a call at 913-649-2002. That's 913-649-2002 for a quote on your home and auto insurance today. All right, real quickly, Marco, some fact or fiction, 5 questions, 5 takes in under 5 minutes. Fire away.
Jack, fact or fiction, the Chiefs and Bucks will be somewhere other than Tampa.
It's tough right now. I'm going to have to pay attention to what this storm looks like. I'm going to go back and listen to what Gary Lezak said on the Border Patrol, but I'm hoping it's Category 1, so it's not impacting many people's lives down there. I just have a feeling that this game will be moved. If we get to the end of today and there's no announcement, I could see it still being played in Tampa if it's supposed to hit the shore today. If there's no announcement, then I'd expect this game to be played in Tampa. But I think for now, my gut feeling is telling me it's going to be played elsewhere, so I will go fact. The Chiefs and Bucks will be playing somewhere other than Tampa this Sunday night.
Fact or fiction, Kansas State has more than 420 yards on offense this Saturday.
I'm probably going to go fact. I'm going to go fact on this because I feel like Texas Tech's defense is just not going to be able to slow them down. It's going to be a shootout. If Texas Tech wins, it's going to be a shootout. If they don't win, it'll be a blowout in favor of Kansas State. But Kansas State is going to put up yards in this game, so I'll go fact over 420 yards offensively for the Cats this Saturday.
Fact or fiction, KU's defense holds Iowa State to under 28 points.
If they hold them under 28 points, I think they win. And that should not be a a high bar to climb. I feel like your defense can come up with some big stops, similar to the way they did in the Duke game. I just don't think Iowa State's offense is good enough to put up over 30 points in this game or over 28 points in this game. So I think I'll go fact. I think Iowa State has less than 28 on Saturday against Kansas.
Fact or fiction, Texas fires Sarkisian if the Longhorns miss a bowl game this year.
I kind of feel like fact, man. There's no excuse this year to miss it. You're 2-2 now. You're at the bottom of the Big 12. Still time to turn things around. And, of course, Quinn Ewers was hurt in the Alabama game, and he's been banged up. But I think fact, if the Longhorns don't make a bowl game this year, I think they'll fire Sarkisian.
And lastly, fact or fiction, the Chiefs will have at least 5 wins before the bye week in Week 8.
They're going to turn around here soon. The offense is going to get clicking, and the defense has already been great. They're going to get healthier from that point on. So I'm going to go fact. I think by the time they roll into the bye week, they'll have one more loss against Buffalo. I think they'll be 5-2 after their game in the Bay Area against the 49ers. And heading into the bye week, can get much, much healthier and get a week of rest. All righty, that'll wrap it up here. There's Ray Charles, so it's time to go. That's another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Talk to you tomorrow at 10 AM, Kansas City.